I'm going to give you for formally 15 minutes, now 10 minutes to discuss that. So we're going to do either fast forward, speed it up on compressed speech, or cut something. She'll decide what's important. Let me give you Kate Mendez, so all you be quiet. She'll lecture you. Beep, 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 Prince Juan went beep, beep, beep. Now we're doing 110. This certainly was a race for Rabbit Road, Bass, and Caddy. A big disgrace. The guy must have wanted to pass me out. He's kept on tooting his horn. I'll show him that a Cadillac is not a car to scorn. Beep, 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 beep.
Wow. Well, that's the most original introduction I've ever had. Okay.
I actually...
No. Right. No, I'm not that person who can't sleep at night and is channel surfing on the radio. That's me. No, really quickly, I will condense, because it's so seldom that we get to hear from the senior members of our society and of our organization. And I was saying to my parents, who are hiding in the back inconspicuously, that, you know, it's such a privilege to get to hear those stories and see how far we really have come. So
we're never inconspicuous, Kate. It's not in our nature.
Not anymore.
Oh, thank you. So in the... Hang on, I'm sorry. Now I just totally lost my thread. In the interest of not being boring after all of those wonderful stories, I'm going to try and keep this really short. Does everybody, if you don't know what a quiet car is, say aye. Okay, good. That means I can at least, I can put, to use the introduction that I was planning to use. Quiet cars are really actually quite interesting. They are the newest hybrid vehicles. The two that we saw at the convention last weekend were a Toyota Prius and a Honda Civic. And they're lovely and they're environmentally friendly, and the engine inefficiencies that were using up a lot of gas and not doing good things for our atmosphere have been corrected. And in the process of tinkering with engines and making them super and wonderful and modern, they made them silent. I'll get to that in a minute. So basically, when you do speech writing and persuasive writing and all that kind of stuff, they tell you, you know, put the exciting part, put the big important part at the end. But this time I'm going to put the really important, exciting, riveting part at the beginning, because I want everybody to understand how important this is. The first thing they did with us when we were down in Baltimore last weekend was to take us outside, and it was cold, and stand us on a street corner and drive a Toyota Prius and a Honda Civic, these new hybrid cars, past us. And honestly, if somebody hadn't told us they were going by, we wouldn't have known they were there. At street level, non-highway speeds, quiet street, there was no background noise. This is hard. This is unbelievable for a Federation event, but there was a minimum of chatter. It was very, you wouldn't have known they were there. You wouldn't have known they were there. And, of course, who here uses their hearing to help them travel? Yeah. And sighted people, if you didn't say aye just then, you'll actually be surprised by some of the research that was presented to us last weekend. You use your hearing when you travel more than you think you do. These things are a safety hazard to blind people, to sighted people of all ages, colors, and creeds. And last weekend's conference was designed to help us sort of hash out some of the research that's already been done on audition and travel, also to look at some of the possible engineering solutions to the problem. I'm going to go very quickly through some of the events of the morning, but one of the people who spoke last weekend was actually there, and I'm going to give him, if our 15 minutes has been condensed to 10, his 3 minutes has been condensed to about 2, to recap his piece of the presentations that we heard in the morning. Let me start with some of the research that was presented to us at the beginning of the conference. The first thing is that what we hear when we hear traffic varies depending on the speed at which the car is going. So when a car is traveling above 30 miles an hour, what we generally tend to hear is tire noise. Tires on the pavement, movement of air. You're not hearing the engine so much as you're hearing the noise made by the car actually moving. Cars traveling below 30 miles per hour are, that's what you hear is engine noise in a standard car with a traditional engine. With a hybrid car, that engine sound, you don't hear it anymore if a car is stopped and the engine like completely shuts off. Am I right? Yes. And you won't hear a thing. So that's the difference between why at a street speed and at a highway speed, what we're hearing from these new cars is different. Okay. What they did say was that, and we were witness to this when they went and showed us the trials with us, cars accelerating from a full stop to an 18-degree speed from a red light or a stop sign, you can actually hear that. You can hear the acceleration, or at least we were able to. It's not as loud as it might be from some of the wonderful old clunkers that are, you know, really easy to find, but it is somewhat audible. The tests that, I believe it was Michigan University that they didn't cover cars backing up and the sounds that they made, starting and stopping, changes in acceleration in a car that's moving. So this was a very isolated test that they gave us the results of, but it's something, it's information that we didn't have before. Other information that was given to us as a result of several studies, and I'm going very fast, kind of squashing things together, is that vision does not play a tremendously significant role in terms of people being able to determine safe crossing gaps, crossing windows when they travel. People are with wide gaps and small gaps, vision actually plays a fairly insignificant role in determining that speed. What we're talking about in terms of finding sounds maybe to replace the sounds of traffic that we hear, this was an interesting piece of information, that repetitive and high-frequency sounds, so for example, is a lot easier to hear than something kind of low and monotonous in the background when you're confronted with ambient noise. Store that in the back of your mind for later when we get to some of the group discussions. Other studies are in progress trying to determine the combination of sound, visual and hearing cues that hearing and non-hearing people use to when they travel and cross streets. So that's kind of in very, 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 very brief, the first hour of the actual discussions. Studies are also being done to determine the effect that distance and time has on hearing cars, and they're using traditional engine cars for this, but they're taking this information and trying to apply it backwards to the quiet car problem. So they did tests with sighted and non-sighted people, having cars come up hills and around bends and around like past obstacles. And those things do affect detectability. We probably could have told them that. And let's see. So what they're trying to find out through all of these tests is whether the issue that we're having with hearing quiet cars is symptomatic of a larger problem. Is it a car noise in general problem? What are the problems that we're having trouble hearing with the quiet cars? Is it speed? Is it particular movements? Is it turns? Is it backing up? What are the things that we're having issues with? What if we're going to make accommodations with the cars so that we can hear them? What are the implications for people with hearing loss, for children, for elderly people? And if we're going to make modifications that make cars make noise, what kind of sounds would we need? And what kind of sound would be tolerated by society? For example, if your car went driving down the street blasting, I don't know, punk rock music as its mode of identifying its presence, some elements of society might have an issue with that. So talking about what might be a practical way of putting the noise back in the cars. So that's kind of to what that research tended. The Access Board for the Department of Transportation gave a brief speech, which in short basically said, sorry, that's not our problem. Talk to the Department of Transportation. Said, you know, get the research to convince the engineers that there actually is a problem so that, you know, they'll take you seriously and go do something about it. I wouldn't put it that flippantly if we didn't have a time constraint. They are saying basically that the problem is symptomatic of an over-accommodation of wheeled traffic and an under-accommodation of pedestrians, which give me a shout-out if you definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those of us who live upstate and, you know, there is no accommodation of pedestrians in the form of sidewalks in some places can definitely attest to that. I'm going to give this over really briefly to Mr. Gary Wunder, because this is the point at which his panel came on, and he will be able to, I'm not an engineer, so he'll be able to give you the details of his with much less babbling than I would be able to do.
Actually, she scares me a little bit. She didn't know that I was sitting at the head table this morning. They asked her about the Quiet Conference, and she said there was a lot of hot air there. So,
I was more referring to the afternoon
session. Yeah,
I
bet you were. The long and the short of it is we have two ways to deal with this. We can either make a device that we carry with us that will alert us about quiet cars, or we can make cars emit some level of noise. It's not going to be terribly complicated to figure out what level of noise, what frequency of noise. I think really what we came down on the side of in the conference was we want the cars to make some level of noise. We're not willing to give up all of the parallel information we get at the same time from vehicles. We know whether they're stopped, whether they're accelerating, whether they're decelerating, whether they're going straight, whether they're turning. We can judge their distance from us, and we're not convinced that any one electronic device can give us all that information. We don't want just a yes or a no. We want to be able to use our brains, our onboard computers, and our sensors, our ears, and figure out what to do. So we're going to figure out some level, I think, of minimal noise. We're going to work with the car manufacturers, and I think that's the way we're going to try to go. Is that brief enough?
Amen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's brief enough and very succinct and excellent. So in the afternoon, this all happened before lunch. So it was a very busy morning. In the afternoon, what we did was basically what we call in education breakout sessions. I don't know if like normal people call them that. But we basically broke up into small groups, and in the first one, we discussed possible solutions to the problem. Basically, came to the consensus that Gary just mentioned, that we're trying to really to look for ways to make the cars noisier, because that's really more practical in the long run. In the second session, we talked about ways to get that accomplished. Toyota's a big company. Honda's a big company. You know, you don't just go up to them and bang on their door and say, hey, we can't hear your cars. Make them make noise. And have them not laugh in your face and slam the door on your foot. So what can we do to implement some steps to make it so that we can eventually get back to being able to hear these cars? Because they're wonderful and environmentally friendly, but they're not very people-friendly. As a matter of fact, in the Toyota manual for the Prius, there is a citation, a little note to the effect that drivers need to be watchful and aware of pedestrians because the cars are silent. So we kind of jumped on that and said, oh, isn't this great? We can start a public awareness campaign among some of the things that we were thinking of to kind of make people aware. Hey, even Toyota says that their cars aren't very... are maybe a little bit dangerous to pedestrians. A campaign, and we weren't just talking about blindness, we were talking about a businessman walking down Broadway, looking at his cell phone, steps out in front of a quiet car that he doesn't hear because he's looking at his cell phone. Children playing in the street, which they definitely still do. Also things like an elderly person whose hearing, if the car made a few decibels louder worth of noise, might be able to hear it, but who, as it stands now, is no way going to be able to hear a quiet car. So things like that. We also talked about, this isn't something that the Federation is going to be able to do alone by shaking our fists and yelling or by sweet-talking. This is something that, because it affects a larger section of society, is also it should be dealt with in the frame of a larger section of society. So we talked about... finding lists of anecdotal stories about issues that people have had with quiet cars and consulting with groups of people with hearing impairments, veterans, children's groups, the AARP, parents' groups, schools, all of these other places where people might have concerns, the same kinds of concerns that we're having, or would have those concerns if they were having a problem that's
Upon a time, there was a time race.
Some practical solution to this problem.
The way the hours.
Blind people going to
think of all the brain.
nearsighted people and older people and people who drive. And, you know, if car buyers say to Toyota, Honda, hey, you know, this is a great car, but I don't want to accidentally, you know, kill someone because they don't hear me coming. That's another, you know, another way of making ourselves heard. So unless I've missed anything, and there were a lot of people in this room who were there, so if I missed something, please tell me. That was pretty much the consensus of the day. It was a very interesting conference, and here comes Mr. Carl, ready to wipe this mic right out of my hand. So here you go.